And let me also thank George and Dana for inviting us to this beautiful place, although I don't know why they keep trying to starve us to death. It's horrible. Okay. Boom. So I'm going to try to... First of all, let me... Where's that Dave Hathaway? No. It's funny that... Oh, yes, yes, yes. You're right. It's okay. Where is it? The function F7? Yeah. No, the trouble is the C. Boom. Okay. That was my fault. Okay. So I'm going to try to convince you that topology is the all-important ingredient for CMEs, for explosive eruptions on the sun. And let me just, to start the thing, show the movie that Gopal showed earlier. This is a CME on September 12th, 2000, as observed by Lasko. And so what you're looking at here is the eruption from 5 to 30 solar radii. So here you can see a lot of structure. The problem is you can't tell much about what happened at the onset because there was tremendous evolution in going from the corona, low corona, where the thing presumably started, out to here and then propagating to the wind. By here, it looks like, you know, basically one of these bugs has splattered onto your windshield. So the topology is not apparent from here. You really have to go down to the corona before the event to see what was there beforehand and what's going on. And here's the corona before the eruption. Ah, what happened there? I guess dark matter. Okay, so what we see here is a filament, big black filament, which then takes off, just kind of ejected. And of course you see the post-eruption loops afterwards. The interesting point here, there are many interesting things actually, this thing is fascinating, but the one thing to keep in mind in terms of topology is that the thing that gets erupted, right, has a very different topology than what the corona has afterwards. In other words, these loops that form afterwards, although I haven't done the calculation, I bet you are quasi-potential. They're what you would expect to see. Right? There's probably, say, a positive region here, a negative region here. So these loops afterwards are what the field should be. It's this kind of bizarre thing, this little snake thing, that's running perpendicular to the way the field should go, that, you know, seems to be, at least from this movie, I would say, playing a key role, if not causing the eruption. So the magnetic field in the filament is strange, right? The magnetic field in the filament is very different than what the field is up above, and you know, is very different than what you would expect for a potential field. But of course, you can't tell what the field is just by looking at these pictures. You want to measure the field directly. Here you can only infer the field, trying to guess at it. Since we can't see it in the corona, the best we can do is look at it in the photosphere. So here's the field at the photosphere on this day, as seen by MDI. And what you see is there's a polarity inversion line here, positive polarity, negative polarity. The filament runs along here, so obviously the field must be strongly sheared, that we know. And then the overlying field lines look as if, at least after the event, are quite potential. So the eruption involves the ejection of this strongly sheared non-potential field, right? And I would argue that drives the ejection. Notice also, though, that you don't have a single polarity inversion line. You know, if you're talking about topology, you have one polarity inversion line here, so it's a dipolar region, but then you have another polarity inversion line here, you have inversion lines all over the place. It's complex. The corona as a whole is obviously quite complex. Now, the question is, does this complexity play an essential role in the eruption, or is it kind of like, you know, just a passive neighbor or a passive feature? That's something we'll have to discuss. I would argue it does play the essential role in getting the eruption. Although the eruption itself, the energy release that you see as a flare in any case, occurs due to this filament being ejected, so it's concentrated around here. So it's not that you see an eruption from this filament and then you see a bunch of brightenings here and here and all over the place. No, it's the ejection of the highly sheared field that is the main story, but the question is, what do you need in order to get that ejection? So, from these observations, or from many others, you can get the numbers, and the numbers were discussed by Gopal very, very carefully. You have to have a border of 10 to 32 ergs or more. And then also, as Terry has emphasized, this energy must be stored in the corona, it must be in the coronal magnetic field. Okay, so to get an explosive eruption, like we saw before in that CME, you have to have two things. First, you have to have some kind of a pre-existing force balance, right? In the corona, you have that force balance, and then you have to have some mechanism that breaks this force balance. Like, for example, you know, if I try to balance this thing on the table, there's a force balance, quasi-force balance, between the weight of the pointer and the push on the table. But if the thing is not quite exactly balanced, as soon as it moves off a little bit, the force balance is broken, and the motion of the rod is such that it increases the force imbalance, right? So there's a positive feedback between the force imbalance and the evolution of the system. That's a classic instability. So you need to have some kind of positive feedback mechanism as well as a pre-existing force balance in order to get this explosive growth. Now, it's not easy to get this in the sun's corona because of the topological properties of the sun's corona. And there are two properties that are kind of obvious, but they have very powerful implications. First, the corona has infinite volume. What I mean is that there's no lid in the corona, right? Everything expands out into infinite space. So what that means is, if you're trying to pump energy into the magnetic field, there's always a preferred route of escape. The field could just expand outwards and blow open to form the solar wind. There's no reason, a priori, why the field has to blow open. It could just expand gradually. And in fact, that's what it does most of the places. In most of the places, the field just kind of expands outwards. As the regions get more and more magnetic field, as more flux emerges, we get more heating, the thing gradually opens up gently into the solar wind without an explosion. Okay. So the fact that you have an infinite volume puts a strong limit on the amount of energy you can store in the corona, but also it kind of limits where you can store the energy. What it tells you is you cannot have the energy stored in the high-lying field. That field is just going to open up. If you want to have a large storage of energy in the corona, it's got to be very low-lying. In fact, it's exactly what you see with this filament. This filament is the lowest-lying field. So you can store store energy there and then have, let's say, unsheared field over it, acting like a lid. Okay. So basically, the filament system, or the prominent system, is in some sense the only way the corona could do these explosions. And that's what it does. The other limit, the other thing that hurts here in getting explosions, is that you have a high beta photosphere where the magnetic field is line tied there. Okay, so that puts a lot of constraints on the possible evolution of the magnetic field. It has to be compatible with line tying of the photosphere. The photosphere doesn't care what's going on in the corona. The field lines are anchored there. And what it does do, what that does, is it basically puts enormous constraints on reconnection. You cannot reconnect willy-nilly throughout the corona. Okay, and I'll show that later. So this really limits your possible evolutions. So these two are very strong constraints. On the other hand, what you have going for you is that the polarity, the distribution of flux at the photosphere, is complex. It's not a single bipole. I would argue, if it were a single bipole, then these two constraints kill you. You're never going to get anything. But the complexity lets you get around these constraints. So let's first talk about the first requirement, and that is the pre-eruption force balance. What does that look like? As I said, because the corona is an infinite volume, you have to have low-lying stressed field held down by high-lying unstressed field. And that's true for every model. Right? So here's two possible models for a filament channel magnetic field or a province magnetic field. One is a sheared arcade model, 3D sheared arcade. This calculation is from Rick DeVore, but it's quite similar to some of the results we got years ago with Russ Dahlberg and Jim. And what you have is, you have initially a bipole field. These contours at the photosphere are the normal polarity of the field. So you have a bipolar system, which is stretched out, and you have the strong shear. Okay, and the shear is concentrated near the neutral line here. So that means the field out here is unsheared, and it acts to hold down the sheared field. So the force balance in this case is you have a unbalanced pressure of these field lines. You notice these field lines are stretched out and they're straight. So they have very little tension, but since they're held down, they have a lot of pressure. They want to expand outwards. These guys out here have no shear, and of course there's more of them. They're pushed upwards, and so they have too high a tension here. This tension holds down the stretched field. So the force balance, the pre-existing force balance, is the tension of the unsheared field holding down the pressure of the sheared field. Now you can do it either in a simple sheared arcade. You can do it with a flex rope model. Let me just say that the so-called flex rope models, the bulk of the energy is still in the shear. Okay, the difference between this configuration and that configuration, by the way, this is a calculation from Amari et al., but Amari, Zoran, and John Linker, but it's also been proposed by many people, BC, Terry, Eric, Odd, and so on and so forth. Most of the energy is still in the shear, the fact that the field is sheared, but this field is also twisted. So you have like a helical thing going as well. Let me just say, to be completely unbiased, is that the very nice simulations by Yuhang and Magara show that you can easily get this kind of configuration, comes out naturally, when you emerge a twisted flux rope from below the surface. This configuration, I would argue, is very hard to get because it try to emerges from below, of course, these U-loops weigh down the material. So in terms of how you get the configurations, I would argue this one is much easier than that one, but it doesn't make that much difference in terms of the CME eruption. They both have this property of the high stress being held down by the unstressed up above. And here is an interesting calculation by Rick, in which we do a shearing calculation, which show that if you shear a complex system, a double dipole, you can kind of build up the amount of shear. You can start building up structures that look more and more like a filament. This is motivated in part by the trace observations. Let me just show you what happens here. You start with two dipoles with one neutral line. So just aligned. They're just lined up. So basically you have two flux concentrations. You apply the shear pattern at the photosphere. So you move these foot points in this direction and up here in that direction. And it's concentrated near the neutral line, as I show here. Here's two views of this field. And after you do the shear for a while, this is a full 3D MHD simulation. After you do the shear, what you find is you get reconnection, if you want to call it reconnection or diffusion, when the shear field from this dipole gets close enough to the shear field of that one. Because you shear them so much, you go below the spatial resolution of the simulation, and you actually start to diffuse field lines together, and you get field lines that thread the whole thing. So you get kind of a complex intertwined system.
Is this periodic in the...
No. There's no periodicity here. This is a double...
There's no outside the box on the other side?
Well, what we have is we have open boundary conditions. This is a Cartesian box. Yeah. It's done with an FCT code. It's non-periodic.
What is the speed of the shear motion?
In principle, it should be 1,000th of the coronal alpha speed, right? Because that's what the photosphere does. In this case, it's 10%. So it's not right, but it's close enough.
2 minutes left before questions.
What? Okay, so anyway, interesting thing is here when you start shearing, when you do this reconnection, what you get is you get this highly stressed field. It pops upwards, but there's no eruption. So you get this kind of complicated intertwined, kind of like a mess. You get some reconnection, but nothing much happens. Okay.
Is there a
Does it also lift the overlying beams?
Of course. These field lines are way above what they were before. But they don't break. You haven't gotten rid of the overlying fields. You just stretch them outwards.
You said these are what's fixed by the trace observation, so I guess you will see the observation of precisely that.
What's this?
You will have seen the trace observation of precisely such an aneurysm in a filament.
What I'm saying is that the trace observations show that it looks as if these filaments kind of line up and they emerge to get longer filaments.
They also show yes, sir. Aneurysms.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so the trace is following. It's following your simulation.
No,
I'm not. I'm just saying that the you know, it's amazing. It's horrible the way trace keeps copying our simulations. Okay, anyway. So, let me get to the next two view graphs because those are the key to the whole thing and, you know, the rest of it you can neglect. Okay, so the topology seems pretty straightforward. The topology is this low-lying stress with overlying unstressed. Okay, so that part is kind of, you know, in agreement. Exactly what is the detailed structure of the low-lying stress is maybe not in agreement, but that basic, you know, force balance I think everybody agrees on. Question is, how do you break that force balance? Okay, Ali and Sturrock, in their work, they argued that if you kept shearing this thing, nothing would happen. You would not get an explosive eruption through some kind of ideal process. The system would just simply expand slowly and eventually open up by simple expansion. And this conjecture is supported by many numerical simulations. You find that the energy of any state, any 3D state, you calculate in a force-free, is always below that of the open state. And there's no evidence for an ideal energy release, at least for 3D MHD simulation with appropriate boundary conditions, okay? So you have to have a reconnection for an explosive eruption. That's what I would argue, but we can discuss that. Okay, so once you start talking about reconnection, then topology is, you know, basically the whole story. So what is reconnection? First of all, let's look at a multipolar system. Okay, so what do we do here? Here we have the sun. Here we have one neutral line, another neutral line here, another neutral line there. Okay, so this is a multipolar field. Okay. As soon as you have a multipolar field, as soon as you have more than one polarity inversion line, you have to have null points in the corona. But let me say, though, that in this multipolar field, you have that at the photosphere, the normal field doesn't go to zero except at the neutral line. Okay, so if you're looking at these multipolar systems in which you replace a smooth distribution of flux to the photosphere, a continuous distribution by little, you know, point particles, yeah, you're going to get null points at the photosphere because what happens is you're artificially putting whole null surfaces at the photosphere. But if you have a smooth distribution of flux at the photosphere, and it could be highly, you know, concentrated, and if it's multipolar, in the sense that you have more than one neutral line, you're always going to get null points in the corona, guaranteed. So you have this kind of configuration very, very naturally when you have a multipolar system. Okay. Question is, how does reconnection work in this kind of system? Well, what is reconnection? As you know, in the corona, the field is frozen in, right? Because of the low resistivity, then basically the field and the plasma moves together. So you cannot diffuse field over a very big distance. What that tells you, right? The frozen condition says you cannot separate in plasma, field and plasma, over a big distance. But you can have small regions where you do a little bit of diffusion. So for example, I can create a current sheet here if I wanted to. I can create it here. So I can have a little small region with a little bit of diffusion anywhere I want to. Right? But suppose I do that. Suppose I have a little bit of, I put a current sheet right here, and I reconnect these field lines together, these two blue field lines together. What that means, and of course I have to do it in 3D. I can't do a reconnection for this in 2D. What am I going to get out of that? All I get is a tangling of these blue field lines. Right, I mean, these field lines are like straight to begin with. They're going to tangle up. It doesn't do much for you. So a little bit of reconnection in here or over here or over here or even over here along the separatrix. If I do reconnection there, put a current sheet there, I get a little bit of tangling and I stop. Okay? It's only if I have reconnection at the null that I can get something magical, because if I reconnect these field lines, I'll convert them to green field lines, and I can have big changes in the magnetic topology with a little bit of diffusion. And it's a systematic thing, so I can reconnect at the null, bring these two field lines together, get them out of the way, then bring these two together to the new null, get them out of the way. So a little bit of reconnection or a little bit of diffusion at the right spot, and at the right spot is determined by the topology, can make macroscopic changes to the system.
Sphere optics will get inflow in the fusion.
Don't worry about that. That'll come naturally. But the point is, if you try to do the same process anywhere else, it won't work. Okay? Whether it does happen is something else. But all I'm saying is, only at the null will you get effective reconnection. That's why the null is so important. And here's two simulations to show just that, to show the basic physics here. These are, in some sense, identical simulations. They're both fully 3D using our, MHD code. What we do is, in one case, we have a bipolar field, which we apply strong shear. In the other case, we have a multipolar field, which we apply a strong shear. And one thing is to look at the difference in the evolution between the two systems, which are in some sense driven identically, same boundary conditions everywhere, same code and everything. It's only a question of the initial topology. So for this one, when you do the, when you apply the shear, the interesting thing is what doesn't happen. Basically nothing happens. You shear the field lines. Yes, there is some reconnection because there's so much shear here that it goes below our resolution. And you kind of, reconnect field lines between these field lines and these unsheared ones, like I said before. But you get no eruption. You don't have that these field lines, which are highly stressed, you'd think they'd want to go over the top now, somehow tunnel through these by reconnection. They don't do it. So this limitation on the fact that the field lines, if they do reconnect, kind of still stay in the way, kills that system from doing anything. So a bipolar system, even though you stress it like crazy and you do get diffusion reconnection, does not undergo any catastrophic evolution. It is limited by this line tying constraints. Okay? Let's do the same thing here. What is this? This is a multipolar system. We have one neutral line here, way out here. It's like the global neutral line of the sun. Here is a positive and negative, big region, positive and negative spots corresponding to an active region. And inside this negative region, we have another positive corresponding to a delta spot. Okay, so here's a delta spot configuration, the ones that Hal loves, because they're the ones that lead to flares. Okay, and this delta spot configuration, if you take a cut through it, the topology is identical, really. This is fully 3D, but the topology is identical to that. Okay, except now it's in 3D. So if you do this, reconnection, forget helicity.
It's not helical.
Helicity doesn't have to be helical. When I do a shear, I increase the helicity. It's always the case. Helicity does not mean the field lines are twisted. Okay, sheared field lines have tremendous helicity. Okay, what I do here, to do similar to that, I rotate the sunspot. By I mean Rick DeVore rotates it. So you're putting in shear at this neutral line, that drives reconnection between this flux system and this flux system, and it results in a burst of reconnection. And the shear that you put in gets ejected out the top. Okay? So the systems are driven the same way, but the difference in initial topology means huge difference in explosiveness, the energy release, and so on and so forth. Okay, now, so let me just, say one more thing. And the question is, okay, so for this thing, we need magnetic nulls in the corona. Do you see nulls in the corona? Could be, yeah. Looks like it. Okay, I'll go to the conclusions. I won't show other simulations, even though I know you'd love to see them. So, Let me finish off with the issues I think that are outstanding and perhaps we'll would be interested in working on while they're here for this for the workshop. First of all, what is a detailed topology of filament channel field? Is it just does it have a global twist? Is it an intertwined type thing? Is it simple shear? And then very important, how do you get this topology? In other words, how do you get a filament channel? Now, I was very encouraged by the simulations by Yu-Hong and Nagara, which showed that you can actually get a sheared arcade from flux emergence. It's very interesting to pursue that. But are there other ways of getting it? So how do you get the topology of a filament channel, and what exactly is it? And then the other question is, does reconnection lead to the explosive disruption of this topology? Where does reconnection occur? How does it evolve in 3D? And what are the observational signatures? And maybe we have time later, I can show you some movies of our breakout model in with a 2.5D AMR code. But we'll save it for discussion.
A lot of what you're saying about topology, I just don't understand why you think it requires a magnetic null in the corona to change topology. I think a lot of the 3D reconnection work has shown that actually where it happens is not a null point, but a separator.
Oh, okay. In the simulation that I showed previously of this, this multipolar delta spot, in fact, you have a separator line in the corona, and that you actually have like four nulls. I agree completely. A separator and a null point are the same thing. I don't distinguish between the two.
I don't think they're the same thing, but I will agree you don't distinguish between them.
They're the same. They're the same. In the 2.5D, what I showed there, that null point is a separator. If you were to tilt the thing, you would get two null points and separator lines. The reconnection would occur all along the separator lines. I agree completely. But you'd have to have a null point in the corona, or two null points, in order to have the correct separator for reconnection. It does you no good to have what would be a separator in the corona if the null points are built in the photosphere. That's not a separator anymore. Okay?
Quasi-separator.
Forget this quasi-separator. Quasi-separator gives you quasi-reconnection, which means nothing.
Not true.
Well,
quasi works.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
You don't need a null point to get reconnection.
If you do the simulation, 3D simulation, where the null points are not in the corona, you have some source distribution that's down below, even though you have what would have been a separator, I guarantee you nothing will happen. Just do it.
Here, you want to add something to that?
An observer's question. I mean, a null point, an observer, like you will understand, it means zero field.
Yes.
But a separator, how weak is the field of a separator relative to the neighboring field?
The null point is zero field. A separator is not the zero field.
Is it reduced field?
No.
It's strong.
So it's zero field.
It's strong.
So it's indistinguishable in terms of p squared as you go across it.
A true null point has zero field,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And those exist.
We can use that to trap particles. That's really useful. But we can't trap them on a separator, apparently.
Well, a separator is a line of measure zero, so I wouldn't worry about it. The only thing it does for you is it gives you topological discontinuity at which you have four flux systems come together and you can do this reconnection business. So that happens at a separator line or a null point. You want to have this four flux system meeting so you can interchange flux. That's all it does for you. By the way, here is a nice simulation you might want to look at while you ask questions.
I think we ought to go on here because we're still on time, believe it or not.